Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Thinking Jew podcast, where we dive deep into Torah and Jewish philosophy. I'm your host, Rabbi Moshe Siegel. Feel free to reach out with any questions, comments, feedback, or you want to make a request for a coming topic. My email address is thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com. So today I want to discuss a really super fundamental question that exists in Judaism, and it's regarding the mitzvah, the Torah obligation to love God. We're all familiar with the Shema. The Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, basically the Pledge of Allegiance of the Jewish people in the unity of God. The first verse we say afterwards is the following verse, V'yahavta es Hashem Elokecha v'chol levavecha v'chol nafshecha v'chol miyodecha. And you should love Hashem your God with your whole heart, with your whole soul, and with all your money. And the question that I've gotten asked a lot of times, I think bothers a lot of people, is what does this mean exactly to legislate an emotion? How could the Torah command us to feel love, to love God? Everyone knows there's nothing more frustrating than, you know, you're in a bad mood and somebody looks at you and says, like, just snap out of it. Why can't you just be happy? Just focus on good things. There's nothing more irritating than that. Like when you're in a certain mental space, when you're not feeling something, it's very hard to just demand a change of emotion. So what exactly, how do we understand this concept of God commanding us to love him? Think of a classic mitzvah. Almost all mitzvahs, almost all commandments of God are generally action-based. And that's an interesting discussion in and of itself, right? It's almost all action-based, very few that are mental. But an action, we can understand how you can command me to do an action despite the fact that I don't feel like doing it. I could be not in the mood to shake a lulav on Sukkot, or I could be not in the mood to put on my tzitzis, and I'll do it anyways, because we could do actions even if we're not in the mood for them. But to feel something when we're not in the mood, emotions are so much more complex than that. How do we understand this obligation, this commandment of God, this mitzvah of loving God with everything you have? So for starters, I really want to just start with a little bit of a reframe. I'm not really saying this as an answer to the question. I'm going to throw this out as an interesting discussion point. I'd love to hear your feedback on this comparison. And I'll continue afterwards with really, I guess, a different approach from one of the rabbis. But to me, this is just a more of an eye-opening thought that would maybe be a reframe of the whole question and really how difficult is this question in the first place. So imagine the following scenario. Imagine you're married, you have three kids, and you get home from work one night, you're a little tired, you walk in the door and you hear a screaming match between your eight-year-old son and your six-year-old daughter. And the decibel level is just getting louder and louder. Your son is screaming loudest to start, so you call him over and you say, hey, what's going on, Sammy? And he responds, I hate my sister. I hate her, I hate her, I hate her. So how do most parents respond to this when one sibling says they hate their other sister? Do we say, hey, listen, we can't obligate any emotions. We can't demand any emotional responses. So if you hate her, that's just a fair reaction. And what's for dinner? No, of course not. Nobody says that. What do almost all parents respond to this? We all say, what are you talking about, Sammy? Of course you love your sister. You just wait and see. You really do love your sister. What kind of answer is that? How do we as parents go over to our children and tell them, you know, you really do love your sibling? It's their emotions. It's their business. What's the difference between demanding an emotional feeling, an emotional relationship between two siblings, and God demanding an emotional feeling towards him? Seemingly, it's really basically the same thing. So I just thought that was kind of an interesting perspective to throw out there in terms of, do we really believe that emotions aren't expected of us? Do we really believe that emotions can't be demanded? I'm curious to hear your feedback on that. Shoot me an email, thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear your take on that. For now, I want to share with you a different approach to understanding what exactly is this obligation to love God. I want to add a second layer to it, which is another famous verse in the Torah. This one can be found in Leviticus chapter 19. Verse 18, the famous verse of Ve'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha, that you should love your neighbor as yourself. So here again, it's not between man and God, it's between man and his fellow man, but it seems again an obligation of love that's extremely difficult. How can you command that I love every single Jew? What if I find him annoying? What if I don't like him? Add on to this that Rabbi Akiva, the great sage of the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva teaches us that this is the great principle of the Torah. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. And Rabbi Akiva summarized the whole Torah with one rule. Unfair to require emotional feelings like that. One mantra, what would we say? Says Rabbi Akiva, the great rule of the Torah is you should love your fellow as yourself. So again, how do we legislate that? How do we demand that you love your fellow Jew the same way you love yourself? It seems impossible. There are a lot of answers to this question, and really it taps into a greater question of what exactly does it mean to love someone, to love God? What exactly does love mean in Judaism? And that's really a bigger concept. Maybe we'll save that to go more in depth. That's what we can apply in so many aspects of life. Analysis in that in a different podcast. But today I want to just share with you a fascinating insight that I found in the works of the great Hasidic master, Rabbi Menachem Nachum of Chernobyl, who authored a book called the Sefer Me'or Einayim, which literally means the book that lightens up the eyes. And he gives us a really beautiful approach that really resonated with me and really, I think, gives us a tool that we can take with us to improve all of our relationships, whether they be with God, with our fellow man, spouses, kids, parents. I think it's really So the book is written in Hebrew. I'll just give you my translation of his answer in English. He says as follows, and even if you see something wrong in your friend, you should hate only the negative within him, but his holy part you must love like yourself. For the Baal Shem Tov said that a righteous person that has no negativity in his heart doesn't see any negativity in others. However, one who sees bad in their friends, it's as if he's looking into a mirror. If his face is dirty, he sees that in the mirror. And the same if it's clean. This is what you should love your neighbor as yourself means. What does it mean as yourself? The same way one doesn't hate himself, despite knowing his own shortcomings, so too you should treat your friend. So too you should treat your friend as yourself. The Me'or Einayim is saying a tremendously powerful idea. He's saying that if you want to love someone, you have to train yourself to see the good in them. The same way when we look at ourselves, most emotionally healthy people, if you ask yourself, am I overall a good person? Am I lovable? Most people will answer yes. Now, if you ask yourself this question, and then you'll say, well, what are my shortcomings? You'll say, yeah, well, I get angry a little easily. Sometimes I'm a little snarky. Sometimes, my patience runs short. We could list a list of 20 things about us that aren't good. Yet at the same time, when we're answering the question of, are we good people overall? We'll answer yes. And the reason for this is because we don't judge ourselves based on our shortcomings. We judge ourselves based on the positive we know of ourselves to be true. And we're able to look at ourselves in that positive light. So the Me'or Einayim is saying a beautiful idea. He's saying we have to treat others as ourselves. Love them as ourselves means what? The same way we judge ourselves based on our bigger picture selves, based on how we view our whole self. And those small aspects of not such goodness doesn't bother our general self-image, our general perspective of ourselves. So too, we should view other people in that same lens where we see the good in them and we view the negative attributes of them as just kind of side problems that they still need to perfect. I still remember clearly hearing the horrible news of there was a mass shooting of police officers in Dallas a couple years ago. I think it was July 7th, 2016. Crazy, it was that long ago already. It was a difficult moment for everyone in Dallas. A very heavy feeling in the city here. And I remember there was a quote that George W. Bush said while speaking afterwards. And it really reminded me of this idea. His quote was as follows. Too often we judge others by their worst examples while judging ourselves by our best intentions. And I think what President Bush was saying, what he was hinting at, is really the same concept that we're talking about now. There's two different elements to ourselves and to others. There's our worst examples, there's our negative sides to ourselves. Then there's our best intentions of how we think we should be, how we think we could be. And we tend to look at others rather than looking at them the same way we look at ourselves, rather than looking at them by their best of intentions, we view ourselves and all of our own personal greatness. We look at them by their worst examples and we judge them negatively. I think these words of President Bush can really be applied similarly to the Me'or Einayim, both of them talking about between man and his fellow man, trying to fix the divide and create unity between man and his fellow man. But the same way it applies to our fellow men It also applies in our relationship with God. We often only feel the need to pray or to connect or to associate with God when something negative happens. I get asked all the time, Rabbi, can you pray for this person who's sick? This person is having a surgery. This person's having a test. That's generally the time when people come searching for God, is in a time of difficulty. And we end up thinking of God in those terms, the same way we judge other people sometimes by their quote unquote worst examples or their negative traits. We sometimes deal with God also. We view God as God's the one that made this person sick, so why can't he heal them? God's the one that gave me this difficulty, so why can't he remove this difficulty? And we sometimes by default start framing God as a source of our negativity in life. But if we take a step back and we see just how much great qualities God has, how much good he really has given us, the mere fact that we're alive, we can eat on our own, we can stand on our own, we can see, we can hear, we can communicate, we have a house, we have means of transportation. There's so much endless good that God has given us, and there's so much best of intentions that God has. There's so much positivity in that relationship. We have to learn to look at God like we look at ourselves also. By seeing the good in God, we'll learn to love God. Like we mentioned before, by focusing on the good and seeing the good in others and also in God, it'll cause us to love others and also cause us to love God. I'll end with a powerful quote from Rabbi Noach Weinberg, the founder of the famous Eish Yeshiva. He said as follows, this really sums up the whole idea we've been saying today so far. The Jewish definition of love is the emotional pleasure a human being experiences when he understands and focuses on the virtues of another. I want to read that one more time because that's awesome. Here we go, Rabbi Noach Weinberg. The Jewish definition of love is the emotional pleasure a human being experiences when he understands and focuses on the virtues of others. This is our job, and this will improve every relationship that we have. If it's your spouse, if it's your child, if it's your boss, if it's God, if it's your cousin, doesn't matter who this relationship is. If you focus on the virtues of the other person, you focus on the good in them, you will come to love them. When I've mentioned this concept in classes before, we've often finished off a little bit of a workshop. I have a nice long list of virtues, positive character traits. And think of, I'm happy to send it to you, send me an email. Again, thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com. And I'm happy to send you that list of virtues. And then just sit down and think of whichever relationship it is that you want to work on. And pick out which virtues on this list resonate with you in this relationship. And try to see that in the other person. Focus on the good in the relationship. Train your mind to see this person based on their virtues and the good in them. And you'll see how much that will increase the love you have for that person. This concludes episode 2 of the Thinking Jew podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did enjoy it, please go ahead and subscribe so you can make sure you find out about future episodes as soon as they come out and are uploaded. This is your host, Rabbi Moshe Siegel, wishing you all an awesome day.